Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. You are listening to a Rattlegion Broadcasting premiere podcast, Damn You Hollywood. And here's your host, Robert Winfrey. Yay!
No bits, no gimmicks, no jokes, no nothing. It's 2021. Everything still sucks, but we're still here. Thank you all very much for joining us. This is, as Mark said, Damn You Hollywood. I'm Robert. He's Mark. Say hi, Mark.
Robert could have had it all. He's rolling in the deep. Ladies and gentlemen, Robert Winfrey. Yay! All right, I got that out of my system now. That's how I wanted to do it, but I couldn't get the lyrics up in time. I wanted to introduce you by doing lyrics to Rolling in the Deep by Adele.
You couldn't remember. You could have had it all, Rolling in the Deep. Like, that's the... Of all the potential lyrics of that song, that I might have forgiven you for forgetting. Somehow that one...
I've spent the last hour on another call with a friend of mine discussing all the things. I wasn't as prepared as I like to be with my nonsense for you.
That's all right. I appreciate your nonsense most of the time. All right, yeah. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, as we sit here ready to jump into movies for 2021, well, there's just not a whole lot of them, but I am aware about the issues of momentum when it comes to podcasts and how quickly they can die on the vine. So, we kind of went out of our way to find a few movies that are not theatrical releases, but potentially big enough deals to warrant a full review of.
On the other hand, we didn't want to do Lockdown, or The Little Things, or One Night in Miami, or Born to be a Champion, or I could do this all day.
Yeah, point being, when you go to the like straight to streaming releases, you have a lot of choices.
Yes.
And Mark would have nixed almost all of those.
Of the ones I just said, which one did you have? Did you have a burning desire to do the Lockdown on HBO Max?
No.
Okay.
No. Giving you grief. That's
okay.
All.
Okay.
You see, my nonsense works because you don't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
Point being, Mark would have nixed a lot of those. The only one that I mean, a little bit behind the scenes here, the only one of those that I think we could have maybe had a legitimate go at was Born a Champion, but we went with this one. Tonight we are reviewing the Netflix original film Outside the Wire. And if you don't know that's the title of the movie, I assure you they repeat it a gazillion times in the first 30 minutes of the film.
It stars Anthony Mackie, who you all know is the Falcon from the Marvel movies, and Damson Idris, who, if you don't know who he is, he plays one of the leads in the Snowfall show, and if you don't know what Snowfall is, it's about how crack became a thing, and it airs on FX, and it's one of my favorite shows because, you know, crack. And Damson Idris is really, really good in it. So it was fun to see him step outside of that role. And he's had a fair share of other parts, but a lot of the stuff that he's been in, I haven't necessarily seen him in. So it was fun to see him outside of his role from Snowfall and do this bit in Outside the Wire. And boy, does he try hard! He certainly is trying. He's doing his best.
That is certain. Of all the negative claims that you can levy at him and this movie, that is true. He is certainly putting forth the semblance of effort. So again, we kind of went over why we got to this movie. It's a Netflix movie. It's ostensibly an action movie. And that's usually an easier sell for Mark. That's kind of how we got here. So, now, this movie's a couple of weeks old at this point, so I assume anyone listening to this has already seen it, but here we go through the plot of this thing. Our main character, our protagonist, our point of view character...
I'm the protagonist! Sorry, wrong movie.
I'm surprised he didn't shout that in this one.
I think think John David Washington has that, like, copyrighted now.
I hope he does.
I hope he yells it into other movies that, like, you know, where he actually has, like, a character's name, and no matter what is going on in the movie, like, he's in a rom-com or something, and he just randomly yells out, "I'm the protagonist," and fucks off.
I mean, I'd pop. I wouldn't watch a rom-com, but I'd still pop.
He's just in the middle of a movie that he's not even really in. He just walks into frame, yells, "I'm the protagonist," and walks away again. This would be a much better use of his time, I think.
I don't know. What's he doing lately?
John David Washington?
I mean, after 10...
That's a good question. Here, you do the plot. Good luck with that. And I will look up his...
Oh, no. The plot for this movie is easy. See, our protagonist here is...
People shoot guns at each other?
That is certainly a thing that happens. They throw us, about 20 years into the future, give or take. And this movie is set in East Europe, because that's where the dart landed when they threw the dart at the globe. There's seriously, like, almost no other reason for it. The character we meet is the character by the name of Harp. I think it was Harp.
Yes.
Harp. Like the instrument. He is a drone pilot of some renown, but makes a difficult call at one particular point. He defies orders because... Can I just say, there's a line later in this, like, you chose me because I've got a history of insubordination. No. You had one incident. That's not a history. he's piloting a drone and sees what he's described as a launcher. What it's supposed to launch, they never actually say. And he wants to airstrike it with his drone. But he can't get the clearance from command, and one of the marine commanders on the ground is like, "No, let me save my two guys." And when it becomes clear this thing's about to go off, he defies orders, he blows it up, the two marines that were trying to be saved wind up as collateral damage. The ethics committee is displeased with him for this, so they send him to the base camp in this part of Ukraine, so that he can see the results of his work firsthand, and the moral preaching that goes on about that is nigh endless in this movie. While there, he is assigned to be with Captain Leo. This is Anthony Mackie, and he is a third-generation AI kind of doohickey. He's entirely synthetic. And they go on a little fetch quest to find stuff related to this warlord Victor Koble, who is fueling some of this. The whole, like, civil war going on here is meant to be a kind of play on the trouble that's still kind of going on in that part of Ukraine, where Russia's trying to reclaim territory and the Ukrainians are like, "No, piss off." So there's, again, it's kind of based on that conflict. So they go through some fetch questy stuff, they deliver some stuff, they meet some other people, they go to where they think Koble is, and part of what Anthony Mackie reveals is part of Koble's plan, is to find these old nuclear missile silos that still have nukes in them, that were part of a perimeter effort from the old Soviet Union, obtain codes for them, and then Koble will have access to nuclear weaponry, and that will radically change the balance of power in the world. So they try to stop him from doing that. Turns out Leo, Swerve Bro, is actually the bad guy. He's been playing Harp a little bit for badly explained reasons, and I will yell about this later. But he ejects Harp from a moving vehicle. Once he has the codes, he then goes, kills Koval and a bunch of his troops, finds the location, and his plan is to actually launch a nuke at the United States so that they will know the price of war and back off and just... No! What thinks gonna happen if a nuke is launched from another country at the United States? They're gonna nuke back. This is the dumbest plan. I'm sorry. I know I shouldn't be doing this now, But this is the dumbest thing. There's multiple people here who think that launching ICBMs from Ukraine at the United States is going to somehow de-escalate tension in the region. These people were dropped repeatedly as children.
Yeah, you know, I don't profess to be super knowledgeable and an expert in Eastern European affairs, the Cold War, nuclear proliferation, any of that. But even my monkey ass has heard the term mutually assured destruction. It was the one thing we were afraid of for several decades coming out of World War II. It was the reason I had to, in elementary school, crawl underneath my desk because that somehow was going to stop me from being hit by nuclear radiation. And it somehow manages to escape the writer of this film that the one thing you can count on in this world is nuclear retaliation. But here, the AI, who's smarter than everyone else, says if we launch a nuke at the United States, they'll just stop. Because that's what we're known for.
The error of their ways.
Yes. Yeah.
Just the dumbest possible plan. So he goes to launch the nuke. Harp goes to stop him. Harp stops him. There's a drone strike on the nuclear facility, which is actually quite safe. I'm glad that they touched on this. Like, hey, can we drop a bomb on this nuclear silo without detonating it? And the colonel in charge goes, yeah, of course. detonating a nuclear warhead is a very specific set of things that have to happen. An explosion in the vicinity, you might crack the casing, and you might have some leakage of radiation, but you would not set it off in the way that everyone's afraid of. So, good guys win, bad guys lose, drone pilot learns about the morality of his job, war's bad, the United States sucks, etc. This is just the dumbest.
War is bad.
I really want to know what 10th grade, like, what sophomore in high school wrote this shit. because we get the two dumbest cliches when it comes to discussion of artificial intelligence or robotics or whatnot. One is, what if it's the robot that taught humans about humanity? If I wanted that story told, all I need is Terminator 2. Because that did it infinitely better than this movie on every conceivable level. And then the flip side is, but man's creation will destroy it. Oh, you don't say. Asimov only wrote about this back in the 40s. I forget when Asimov was a prolific writer. Either way. There's not an original thought in this movie's head. The only thing approximating dialogue that we get isn't even good technobabble. They, like, loosely try to dance around some quasi-philosophical or moral conundrums, never actually answer any of the posed questions. I mean, by way of example, part of what allows Leo to go rogue, there's supposed to be a fail-safe system wherein he has to submit to human authority, in theory. However, he can ignore this if the person whose authority he's under has demonstrated compromised judgment. So he puts Harp in a series of positions where he displays compromised judgment, and this allows him to circumvent that. Which would have been fine in and of itself, but then that he kind of mentions at the same time in that same bit. Now, you know, you lead me around, I lead you around. We're stuck in kind of a little, paradox of leadership here, and apparently so. Is it the moral conundrum, or is it the programming issue of paradoxes that allow him to go off the rails and do whatever he wants? It's never actually made clear, because this movie's too stupid to actually clarify anything.
Yeah, I kept getting, as I was watching the movie, especially the early, like, the first hour of it, I kept getting, oh, I know what they're going for here. This, they're going for Training Day with a robot, badly written, about nothing. Got it.
Yeah, that's about right. In the interest of not... in the interest of not just the writing for this I cannot get over. I don't say that this seems like a sophomore creative writing project for nothing. It's entirely too self-satisfied. This person was the first person that came up with the what if the robot's the one with empathy and the human's the overly logical one. You're not that clever, man. You're just not.
So, a couple of things. One, Anthony Mackie is engaging. Anthony Mackie has charisma. He has a very natural charisma. Almost anything he's in, I think as a viewer, you would be drawn to him. And he carries a lot of this picture. He's doing his level best to elevate this tripe. And I can't blame him for how bad this movie is. He's in a poorly written movie. Cole and I were talking last night about the Transformers movies, and we were talking about Man of Steel at one point. And he goes, well, the difference, because I saw a lot of tropes taken from various movies that were incorporated into All Hail Megatron. And he goes, well, the other difference between All Hail Megatron and Man of Steel is this one had color. My point of bringing that up is, as compared to Man of Steel, this isn't a very interesting movie to look at. It's all kind of grays and light browns and very dark colors. I mean, even, I was starting to think about Platoon and Full Metal Jacket and, various war pictures, Saving Private Ryan, the Tarantino one with these Jewish soldiers. Inglourious Bastards. And yeah, there's some color paletting issues with some of those movies just because of the environment that they're in. But they do try to make some distinction where they can. This one doesn't even try. This one, the budget, I feel like, was, $10 million because this looks like shit. It's not that it's out of frame or anything. It just looks terrible.
They spent every penny of that on the handful of scenes where Anthony Mackie is shirtless and they have to render his internal, robotics.
Yeah.
Every penny of it.
But the rest of it's just kind of very blah to look at. It's not a very interesting-looking movie. Damson Idris is playing a very cold and calculating soldier, and they wrote his arc okay. It's very basic, but he at least has an arc. He starts out as a guy who with very little humanity, and then by the end of it, he sort of finds it. It's stupid along the way, and it's, very ham-fisted, but it's there, and I'm not going to not acknowledge it. And I think he's doing his level best to try to, to make that arc internally, but again, he's not given a tremendous amount to work with either. He's a very good actor. I was actually looking at his Wikipedia while you were talking, and there's an episode of Black Mirror that he's in that's really good. He's great on Snowfall. This isn't his fault. Same thing with Anthony Mackie. The rest of it, the rest of the characters in the movie, such as they are, and it's not a long cast list, nondescript, utterly irreplaceable. It's utterly replaceable. Just, I can't tell one character from another. And the structure of this movie, this was not the most well-paced thing I've ever seen. I was going to say, it's a lot like Training Day, but in Training Day, you're very drawn into Denzel Washington trying to put one over on Ethan Hawke. Here, you have no idea what the two of these two are rambling on about through half the movie. And then it just sort of devolves into a shoot-'em-up.
Bad technobabble.
Yeah.
Not even interesting technobabble about what makes Anthony Mackie's character a character, and that, what makes him function? What is, what are his moral parameters? If you're going to have a discussion about AI this sophisticated, those are questions that you kind of do want to have answered at some point, right?
Imagine, somebody wrote this while watching the Merovingian speech from the second Matrix movie over and over again without understanding what the Merovingian was saying. He just liked the way it sounded.
That is unbelievably accurate. it's just badly, badly written in that respect. I have another thing about this, and I think this is important. at the very end of this movie, Anthony Mackie is dying, and he says to Harp, this wasn't actually about the nuke in that respect, it's about ending me and the program that built me, because I am the face of endless war. If man is allowed to do nothing but have machines fight machines with no consequence to themselves, they will destroy each other even faster than they are now. And this is the most important thing. So if their own machine turns against them, they will discontinue the program. And I wanted to pull my hair out because, believe it or not, that's a good character motivation. Like, this character, this machine, is self-aware enough to fully understand the implications of its existence in the world. Like, that's actually the best idea this entire stupid movie has. And it's a throwaway line at the very end to a character who we already don't trust and aren't sure if he's even telling the truth.
Yeah, this feels like it came from the minds of people who think they're smarter than they really are.
As someone who thinks smarter than he is, 100%.
So,
this reads like stuff I wrote in high school. Like, that's really what this reads like.
So, on the Wikipedia page, there's not a whole lot here in terms of production. The film was announced June 2019 with Anthony Mackie set to star and produce, and Mikael Hivstrom to direct. Damson Idris and Emily Beecham joined the cast the following month. Michael Kelly and Pilou Asbeck signed on later. Filming began around Budapest in August 2019, lasting 8 weeks. In the Wikipedia page, this doesn't even have like an announced budget. I guess because there's an appetite in the market for cheaply made movies. You know, I was thinking about the evolution of the video store. So before that, there was an appetite for cheaply made movies because you needed stuff to put in drive-ins. And then the drive-ins kind of went away, and you know, the advent of the VCR came about. And now you have video stores and you have video rental stores, and you need product to put into those places to get people to, you know, to use their VCRs. And so there was an appetite for cheap movies for people to go rent. And then the VCR gave way to the DVD player, and a lot of stuff got remade and put on DVD, but they made it more appetizing for people by putting like commentaries and extras and trailers and stuff like that. You know, they were able to clean up a lot of the old drive-in movie stuff that was out there, got cleaned up and put onto DVD because they could. A lot of that stuff, you know, was able to be digitized. And so an entire market of the old cheap movies was given new life by virtue of the DVD player. And the DVD player went away, and, you know, Blu-ray took its place. And then shortly after, Blu-ray came streaming. And I feel like as streaming is expanding, and there's already all this content that's out there, but I'm looking at like Netflix's plan to release a movie a week, and there's no way you can do that with expensive movies. You have to do them with cheap movies. You'll run out of money if you don't. And so I'm looking at this and I'm like, wow, we really are like have come full circle in terms of like some might say this isn't drive-in quality. This is kind of high quality, but it's also 2021. What does high quality even mean now? You know, of course it's going to look better than the old 1950s drive-in movie. It's 2021. We shoot on digital. We have CGI. But this is, when you think about it, an old 1950s sci-fi action movie that's cheaply made and meant for teenagers to make out in front of at the drive-in movie. It's a giant nothing. You know, it's just shit to put on your service so people will keep paying the service fee.
This is like, I feel like there's and everyone knows this for some reason, I feel like there's an entire subsection of Netflix that is just Netflix and chill movies. I'm pretty sure this is like at the this is an entry firmly into that category. The action isn't good enough to make it an action movie. The science, the fictional science, isn't interesting or explained well enough to make it an interesting sci-fi movie. You put it on in the background and you do other stuff. That's all this is.
Yep. I this did not keep my attention for the nigh almost 2 hours that this thing lasted. And frankly, it was they might have done better cutting it to 90 minutes.
This thing in no way, shape, form, or fashion needed as long as it had. Just no way. I'm not even going to blame the film editor for the choices related to run length. I blame the writers. There's so much crap that they could have cut. I mean, again, just so much.
So, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm curious to see what your answer is. Do you think this movie gets made and released if streaming isn't a thing?
Yeah, for the same reasons that you mentioned the other stuff did.
What do you think? It goes straight to video?
There's
no way this gets released in theaters, right?
No, this is not major. Like, you might get a limited release, maybe. But no, there's no way this gets a full theatrical release. It's just not good enough. Which might be an odd thing to try and say about the quality of the movie, but like you said, it's a drive-in movie. You know, it's a direct-to-DVD thing. I mean, either of those. Like, this isn't a big blockbuster if you release it in theaters. It's never going to crack the top 10. You could have released this in 2020, but when people could still go to the movie theaters, and, you know, our top 10 was, like, our number 10 last year was what? Like, 700,000?
Mm-hmm.
This still wouldn't hit that. It's not interesting. It's not good. The action isn't great. The characters aren't good or memorable. It's overly long. There's... look, again, where you lay different parts of the blame is one thing. And I'm with you in that the two leads in particular are not active detriments to the movie. But when I say there's nothing good about this film, I include their performances. They're not bad, but are you going to remember this thing in 20 minutes? Anything about it? The answer's no.
So this was the most watched Netflix movie. The film was the most watched on the platform over its debut weekend, interestingly enough.
That means nothing at this point.
Well.
That distinction used to mean something as it relates to Netflix. Not anymore.
So, yeah. Damn you, Hollywood. 2021, off to a rousing start. You ready to... So, our next segment...
Yeah, we have a new segment to debut for all of you.
Yep.
You see, normally this is where we would talk about the money, but there is no money. And Mark was sick of every time we did one of these, having to just deal with the existential crises about his blockbusters making no money and then sob quietly into his beer over...
Well, there's nothing to talk about. I mean, you make fun of me all you want, but there was just nothing to talk about. It was like,
Will and I continue to make fun of you over this, but ultimately it became a nothing segment because, again, like you said, no money. There's no money. We don't have any money. We don't have any more money. It's all gone. We don't know where it went. It's out there. It's in Bill's house and Ted's house.
That was the thing. So, the money segment evolved out of the idea of we were talking. I mean, the whole Damn You Hollywood concept came out of we're going to discuss the big budget franchise movies, the big blockbusters, and we'll do some comparative analysis for what was spent versus how much was made, and you know if it didn't make its budget, if it didn't make a profit, let's talk about why. And then 2020 happens. And movie theaters get shut down, and everything goes to streaming, and there's nothing to talk about anymore. Like, the last movie of any value worth talking about in terms of money was Wonder Woman, and everything I've read about that was basically they're satisfied with what it did, but when you look at like, its performance on HBO Max was one thing, and, you know, according to AT&T executives, they were happy with it for what it did for HBO Max. But if in terms of how much box office did it generate, it didn't even make its budget. Like,
yeah, not even close.
No. And, you know, and again, how many more times am I supposed to say that?
Yeah, it would just get, again, very, very redundant very quickly to say there's no money. We don't have it. It's not at the bank. It's actually being reinvested into the community because that's what banking does. But you're all too stupid to understand that, so you just came running for all the cash you could possibly get.
So
it's in the stock market, even though you know that's being that's now being appropriately lambasted and dealt with by portions of the internet having a go at the stupidity and corruption of the stock market and various hedge funds. Good for you, internet. Keep it up. Seriously, I don't want that to be a facetious comment. I think the way that's been handled by a lot of different parties has been just profoundly stupid.
And so,
you know, just last thing on this for the record, everybody laughed, myself included, a little bit when Donald Trump said the entire system, including the economy, is rigged against us. Now we're throwing cash at hedge fund managers of all people. Starting to sound more and more like he was right about that in particular. Anyway, now, in place of the money, because there is no money, we will be debuting for you all a new segment. This will be This Week in Hollywood News with your special guest host. We will throw this over to in front of the green screen to talk about all the ups and downs, all the news of the week. Our mandated reporter, who actually will be doing some mandatory reporting in this instance, Mark Radulich.
All right, here we go. This is our news segment, ladies and gentlemen, in the news in Hollywood.
And now, a Muppet News Flash.
All right, terrific. Just, you know, because I can't break the habit, our worldwide box office in 2021, the number one movie right now is something called The Last Warrior, Root of Evil. That's currently sitting at $26 million. Big Red Envelope. These are all foreign films, by the way. There's nothing domestic here. Big Red Envelope at $22 million. Wish Dragon, $18 million. The Dry, $11 million. Master, $11 million. Gintama, The Final, $10 million. The Soul, not Soul, not the Pixar movie, The Soul, $9,600,000. And we finally get to something that was released in American theaters. The Marksman with Liam Neeson has a worldwide box office of $9,500,000 with almost $8 million being domestic and $1.6 million being foreign. And The Little Things, which just debuted on both HBO Max and in theaters, at $7,500,000 worldwide, $4,700,000 domestic, and $2,800,000 foreign. And then rounding out the top 10 is Octonauts, The Ring of Fire. Again, only a foreign release, nothing domestic here, $5,300,000. And if you're wondering, you know, late in the year we had some pretty big box office. Did it change at all? The answer is no. Wonder Woman currently sits at $152 million. And what was the budget, like $200 million?
Around that, yeah.
Yeah, it's currently at number 13 for 2020. That top 10 actually never changed. The Croods came underneath that, and then, you know, The Invisible Man actually fell to 4 to 15, but for a while there, as was Onward, both of those were in the top 10. Not anymore. Soul, if you're wondering about that one, comes in at number 19 for 2020 with $85 million worldwide. Part of the reason being that one went straight to Disney Plus with no extra fee of $30. But hey, speaking of extra fees for $30, remember Mulan? Remember that experiment? Remember that had a $200 million budget?
Yep.
$66 million worldwide for the year.
Yeah, and I don't think that's I don't think they included the premium purchases from Disney Plus in that figure.
No.
But either way, that was not a that was not, in fact, a great financial return on that particular investment.
Nope. All right, so that's that for the time being. So what's going on in the world of the news? Deadline reporting today, February 2nd, that Wicked... Now, this has been out there for a while now, that they were going to adapt the Broadway musical Wicked to a film adaptation. It's had a bunch of release dates. This is coming out from Universal. And like I said, it had a bunch of release dates, and they kept moving around a whole bunch, and then finally just fell off the calendar entirely. Well, now they have a director. After adapting Lin-Manuel Miranda's In the Heights for Warner Brothers, which is coming out later this year, John M. Chu has his sights set on adapting one of Broadway's biggest hits. Sources tell Deadline that Chu will direct Universal's Wicked, the feature film adaptation of the record-breaking musical phenomenon that is in its 17th smash year on Broadway. Any thoughts about Wicked? Had you ever seen the Broadway musical, read the books or anything?
No, I have no interest in it. I've mentioned this before. I'm profoundly sick of the thought experiment of, but what if the bad guy was really the good guy? Especially when, and I hate to say this especially in this case, but they seem to do this a lot more with female villains than male villains. And it's just a generalized thought experiment I don't like. Not that it can't be interesting, but can we just stop with it? It's not necessary. I mean, when Wicked was originally conceived and produced, it was one of the first ones that did this. Like, hey, what if we reimagine all the events of The Wizard of Oz, but we make the Wicked Witch of the West the sympathetic character, and we give her a tragic backstory and all this crap? And again, the first person to do it usually gets some bonus points for being innovative. Then everybody else starts doing it, and at this point we've had, you know, the Maleficent movies, and I'm pretty sure that, and plenty of other iterations of this same just stupid idea. It's not interesting. I genuinely don't care.
I saw the musical on Broadway. I think I've actually seen it twice. I feel like I saw one version of it here in Florida, and I saw it when it ran, you know, in its initial iteration in New York. I seem to remember there being a joke about weapons of mass destruction and George Bush that I rolled my eyes at, but I was in New York, so it was illegal, and I had to do it, you know, under cover of night.
Of course, one cannot roll their eyes at liberal propaganda.
No.
Not it, sir.
I read the book before it was adapted into a musical. I had already read the book. I have a passing interest in The Wizard of Oz and Frank L. Baum. I've been I was The Wizard of Oz twice, once in a junior high play and once in a high school musical version of it. I've shown it to my kids. You know, like I have a fondness for the IP. So when the books came out, I read the book. I liked the book from what I recall. I enjoyed the musicals. This will be one, you know, much like Cats, I will absolutely take my daughter to. We'll, you know, we might even go as a family. I don't know.
Child with cats, remember.
I think this is one that has, you know, the potential to be a big moneymaker for them. I don't think this will be the disaster that Cats was. You know, people like musicals. You know, I'll be curious to see how well In the Heights does later this year.
Do they?
You cut out what?
They really like musicals.
Yes, Robert. The white people like musicals, and there's a lot of us.
Well, you know, I don't know. I've never been convinced of the validity of the traditional musical in 2020. You know, say the last, you know, 10 years. I'm not saying they're a complete waste of everyone's time and effort. I'm saying if I'm a studio executive, I'm not throwing whatever, you know, $100+ million they threw at Cats. I would never greenlight that amount of money.
Cats was a stupid idea. But like I said, like In the Heights, that's coming out later this year, which is just people being people in the streets of New York, I think it'll do just fine. I think people will enjoy it. And there'll be no buttholes.
Rent a few years ago kind of... A few years ago, didn't Rent kind of bomb?
I'd have to go back and look. I know, like, the musical was fantastic, and, you know, and it ran forever, and people enjoyed it. So,
I'm very happy to draw the appropriate distinction between success of the musical number, you know, of the play, mm-hmm. versus the theatrical, the cinematic adaptation of it. Those are two very, very different things.
Well, that also might have been the problem. I think there were two different versions of a cinematic version of Rent. There was, like, the adaptation of the stage to screen Rent, and then there was, like, a redo of Rent as not a musical. I'd have to go back and look. I might have imagined that. But I feel like there were two different versions of Rent, and people did not like one of those versions. Now you got me curious. Rent. No, I don't want to rent apartments. God damn it. All right, so there was a 2005 version of Rent. And this was directed by Chris Columbus, which is the first problem. And no, this bombed. This had a $40 million budget and a box office of $31.6
million. Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, that's not good. Critically, it was a 46 on Rotten Tomatoes. Okay. This might have been the only version of it now that I'm looking at it.
Yeah, well, I think the theatrical version like got the original cast back. The problem being, of course, at that point, the original cast was like 20, like at least 10 to 15 years older than they were when they originally ran it. So you've got, you know, people in their 30s to 40s playing people in their 20s having 20-year-old problems.
Okay, so I'm looking at Rent, the musical's Wikipedia page. There was the 2005 film, which I just talked about. There's Rent filmed live on Broadway, which is a Broadway production of Rent that took place on September 7th, 2008, and was filmed live and cut together with close-up footage from a day of filming in August of the same year. And then this was available for DVD and Blu-ray. Then there was Rent Live. May 2017, Fox announced plans to air a live television production of Rent. It aired Sunday, January 27th. This is probably what I'm thinking of. January 27th, 2019, it starred Jordan Fisher, Brennan Hunt, and Tinashe. Brandon Victor, Valentina, Vanessa Hudgens, and Kiersey Clemons.
All of those did varying degrees of not well.
So yeah, this ran on the Fox network, and let's see, how was it received? Well, it was nominated for a bunch of awards. The telecast did a 1.4 rating among adults 18 to 49 with 3.42 million total viewers, making it the lowest rated live musical broadcast of its air date. Moving on. God damn it.
Potentially rescind your... Would you care to rethink your position about the popularity of musicals over the last 15 years or so?
I'll find one people liked, goddammit. I think we're getting West Side Story at the end of the year, in addition to In the Heights. Anyway...
I can't wait for them to have reimagined that as a... I'm not even going to say it. I'm going to leave it be. I'm just going to leave that one alone.
Our next story is a sad one. Dustin Diamond, actor from Saved by the Bell, died at 44 of cancer. This one especially meant a lot to me as somebody who has been battling cancer on and off since late 2016, early 2017. He was 44. I am 44, so you can imagine how mentally this kind of messed me up. I was not a huge Saved by the Bell fan. I watched it. Who didn't if you were a white person? But
I did.
You know, I was aware he was saying... I didn't follow him all that closely. Apparently, he got himself in trouble in the last couple of years as an adult before getting sick. What all was the issue with him? Do you remember?
Not specifically. I know he kind of bounced around, the post. He's another example of another in the very long, sad example list of child / early teen actors who achieve a degree of notoriety, and then things just kind of spin out of control for them. I don't recall anything specifically for him, but I know his name had been popping up in relation to, you know, occasionally it was stuff related to, there's probably a couple of DUIs, some drug-related stuff.
He had a sex tape in 2006.
I don't blame him. Look, I think it's stupid to record yourself having sex unless you're a professional.
Mm-hmm.
In case I have... I'm prepared to engage the pornography discussion on a moral level, but I'm not going to say that, you know, if you're two people whose job it is to look good on camera and then perform those acts with each other, I'm not going to call that a bad idea, because that's your freaking job. Anyone else, you know, it was that great joke I heard about that. A heavy bag is a lot like your spouse or your partner, right? After a couple of years, all the padding settles to the bottom, and no one wants to see videos of the two of you.
Okay.
So, look, if you record yourself, especially if you're a person with a degree of notoriety, it's going to get out, and you're going to have to deal with that at some point. But I don't make a lot of, you know, moral judgments about that. I just think it's a stupid thing to do.
Netflix announced an anime series, which we'll be covering here on the network. Pacific Rim, The Black, which I believe comes out March 4th. Yeah, Pacific Rim, The Black comes out March 4th, and I'm not sure where in the timeline it takes place. I showed the trailer to you, I showed it to my kids. Looks interesting. We're going to go ahead and review that when it drops sometime in the last bit of March there. What was your thoughts when you saw it? You said you didn't mind wanting to do it, so it couldn't look too bad.
I mean, I like the first Pacific Rim movie. I don't know too many sapient people who don't. I mean, again, are we talking the highest of cinema? No, but it's a well-made, enjoyable time watching giant robots punch giant monsters. You know, who can reasonably object to that? So, the less said about the sequel, the better.
Yeah, the sequel sucks.
If you're interested, there is a Damn You Hollywood for it in the archives, I believe, and we say more than enough about it at that point in time. But I like the first movie. I like some of the world that they created. I'm certainly interested to see what they do with, if anything. It might be terrible, but I'm willing to take the flyer and see if it is or not.
All right, our last story I wanted to talk about tonight. This was, you know, we decided to do this bit a couple of weeks ago when there was a slew of movie date moves and all kinds of stuff was happening, and I was posting frantically in our group chat about it. That seems to have died off, and so I've had to kind of go back and, all right, well, what am I going to talk about now? Variety is reporting, as of February 1st, Wakanda series in the works at Disney Plus under Ryan Coogler's new Disney television deal. So Ryan Coogler signed a first look with Disney, and one of the things he's putting together for them is a series that just takes place in Wakanda, not involving Black Panther. Boy, do they love the shit out of the Black Panther setting, out of the Wakanda setting, and are trying to milk that cow for all it's worth.
Unless we have to review it, I probably won't watch it. I'm just not that interested. That said, you know, you and I were both mostly complimentary of Black Panther as a movie, and we certainly had issues with it in some respects, but on the whole, I think we were, again, fairly positive about it.
Well, the idea of going back to Wakanda without Chadwick Boseman, you know, and making that setting, that time and place in the Marvel Universe a thing, just screams representation for me, which, you know, it's fine in that sense. they can go back to it. They can make it a thing. They can say, look, here's a place for all of our great African-American and maybe African actors that are out there to come and play in this universe, and they can have great representation, and won't this be a positive thing? And on that level, I'm okay with it. Here's the problem. Without doing a deep dive into the Marvel source material, I don't know how much there existed of Marvel making a big deal out of Wakanda. Wakanda was the place where vibranium came from and where Black Panther hung out. But Black Panther wasn't always in Wakanda. He was off doing a thing. He was with the Fantastic Four. He was with the Avengers. Or, you know, doing something with Captain America. This only became a thing recently with the Black Panther movie, and then everyone, you know, it's like they have to do Black Panther in Wakanda because that's the comics. But once they did it, and people who don't read comics saw it and knew it existed, they were like, "Do all the things from that. That'll get us invited to parties. That'll get us awards. That'll get us acknowledged in the trades." Like, it screams of cynicism. And what might come out of that is something really, really good. But going into it just feels like, they're making a big deal out of this because they think that's what they should be doing. The environment in and of itself is not really worth making a huge deal about.
Here's what I want from this show. There's one thing I want. I won't watch it. I'm not, just because I'm not interested. But I want them to make Wakanda The Wire.
Okay.
Right? That's what I want. I want The Wire, but set in Wakanda.
Be hard to do, because then they have to start, there has to be a heroin trade of some sort.
Sure. Why not?
Wakandans don't do heroin. They're all, like, you know, perfect and wonderful. Dope. Yeah.
This is why I want The Wire in Wakanda. Get the same cast. All right? I want Omar back from the dead because of magic. McNulty, all of them. Just, I want the cast of The Wire to recreate The Wire. They already killed Michael B. Jordan, so we can just play off of his death from the show, right?
That's funny. In Wakanda.
I want gritty realism about Wakanda. That's what I want.
Homicide. Life on the streets of Wakanda.
Life on the Serengeti.
Homicide. Life on the Serengeti.
I don't know where Wakanda is. I don't know where Wakanda's geography is meant to be, because I know the Serengeti is a very specific part of Africa, but yeah, that's what I want. That's what I want out of this show.
Yeah, Marvel's...
It's not what happened, but that's what I want.
Marvel's geography didn't make a tremendous amount of sense. Wakanda was supposed to be this gigantic hidden city in the middle of Africa. The Savage Land was who the fuck knows where, but somewhere down south.
Somewhere in Antarctica, I seem to recall.
I thought it was like South America.
No, like there was the island, like Genosha was an island there, but I think the Savage Lands were some like tropical, somewhere like geothermically heated portion of Antarctica. I might be misremembering.
Yeah, who knows? All right, that's our In the News segment. Hope you enjoy. Go ahead.
Not even the people at Marvel know that one. No one can tell you the act. Well, it depends on who's writing the book at the time, you see.
All right, let's go ahead and do our critical review.
Let us review the critics.
Are you ready? No! I said, are you ready?
No! No! God, please, no! 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 No!
Rich Klein, Shadows on the Wall. All right. Fast-paced and sharply
hold on. Stop for 1 second. The entire snippet of his review is Shadows on the Wall.
That's the name of the publication he writes for.
Oh, okay. My mistake. I misunderstood.
Fast-paced and sharply well-designed, this futuristic war thriller is packed with great action and seamless effects. You, sir, got paid to write that on the DVD box and then found out there was no DVD.
Yeah, you're a shill. You're the worst kind of shill. Shame on you for that. No, none of that is accurate.
Adam Graham of Detroit News, top critic, he gets a little star. Well, star. Outside the Wire passes the time, and there are worse crimes than being watchable and disposable. He's a top critic for that kind of opinion.
I mean, he's not wrong in the sense that time passes when you watch this movie, allegedly. But he's also not wrong in the sense that there are certainly worse cinematic sins than being forgettable and disposable. That's entirely...
So, here's one where... I would imagine the first words out of your mouth is you're going to call this person a weenie. That's what I'm hoping for. That's what I'm setting you up for. Jennifer Green.
I appreciate that.
Jennifer Green of Common Sense Media. Extremely violent. Sci-fi tale tackles war consequences.
I'm sorry, what? You, madam. All right, you're a bigger weenie than Mark is. Like, how could you possibly arrive at extremely violent after watching this? The guy got shot in the neck, and then we see some decently applied prosthetic makeup. This is not an... One, it's a war movie, so there's going to be violence. I hate to break it to you. War's a violent thing. That's actually part of the thesis statement of the entire stupid movie.
Yeah, at one point, Dietrich Samson says, "I'm paid to kill people, sir."
I'm not under any illusions about what we do.
Patrick McDonald.
In all seriousness, if you think this was a very violent movie...
And you've never seen RoboCop, the original.
No kidding. There's any number of movies that are significantly more violent than this.
Patrick McDonald of WKRP in Cincinnati. Ooh. All right. WBGR-FM, 93.7, Monroe, Wisconsin. Terminator meets Rambo. There is a particular...
Ow.
No. I'm not done yet. Terminator meets Rambo. There is a particular morality to drones and robots waging war, and the theme follows through. Not perfect, but a military thriller with some extra texture.
Okay. No. This has nothing in common with Terminator. Pretty much at all. Nothing in common with Rambo, apart from the general war setting. Which even that is not the most accurate comparison, given that, you know, every Rambo movie takes place by design after the war. Rambo's about the cost of war after it's over, not about the cost of war as it's going on. You just picked an action war movie and a movie with robots and mashed them together for the sake of trying to make your stupid point.
Eric Eisenberg of Cinema Blend. When it's not getting in the weeds with its own plot, it's an exciting addition to the cinematic sci-fi canon and does a laudable job leaving the audience with some big questions to ponder.
You know, no. I can appreciate an action movie trying to ask big questions. I really can. But if you're going to pose a big question in your movie, I'm going to go out on a limb and say you should at least have an answer. You can't bring up questions of of the morality of certain actions in this, or the more, you know, kind of existential crises that might drum up as it pertains to, you know, consciousness, free will, the implications of AI that's advanced, etc., etc. You can't just have two people riding in a car say, "Hey, so wait a minute, so did your motherboard freeze, or at what point are you really alive versus not alive?" And have the other guy go, "Go F yourself," and then never address it again. Which is kind of all they do here.
Randy Myers of San Jose Mercury News, top critic. Outside the Wire is an efficient, fast-paced roller coaster ride that's smart
this
and booed.
This is a 2-hour slogfest, and all these idiots out here going, no, fast-paced. No, chock full of action does not equal a fast pace. No,
well, I assume it felt fast-paced because they were on cocaine at the time. Smart and
I assume it feels fast-paced to them because they're watching it at 2x speed.
Buoyed by a razor-sharp screenplay and 2 magnetic performances. Well,
no,
you're half right.
No. Absolutely not to the first one of those. I certainly would not call the performances magnetic. We talked about this. They're not bad. In fact, these two guys are doing the best they can with the material, which is crap. But they're not magnetic. I'm not drawn in by their performance. I'm not repulsed by it the way I am the words that are coming out of their mouths. But I am not engaged.
Jordan Hoffman of TV Guide, top critic. A packed Friday night theater would have bust out in applause.
No.
This would have, what?
This would never have a packed theater on Friday night or any night.
Daniel M. Kimmel of North Shore Movies, a serviceable science fiction action movie with its two leads and special effects lifting it above the fact that it's a story we've seen too many times.
I would disagree on the special effects, but he is correct in the fact that, though, again, Anthony Mackie and Damson Idris. Those two guys, they are dragging this movie kicking and screaming into being something approaching watchable, and God bless them for it.
Julian Little of Adobe.com, a fun ride for 2 hours with a nice mystery to it.
No, this is one of my big. It's actually one of my big gripes about this particular movie. They have their ostensibly their villain show up only at the end, right before he dies. Yet apparently, this guy is charismatic enough and intelligent enough and a good enough leader, and gosh darn it, people like him enough to inspire fanaticism on this level. You can't just say that. That's not one of those things that you can just say happens. No one will believe you. You have to demonstrate it. And that's a real problem that they never actually demonstrated, because I assume the writing is just so bad that they couldn't have strung together something that would approximate stirring the public in any sort of meaningful way other than in the lower intestines.
Amanda Sink of The Hollywood Outsider. With Anthony Mackie and Damson Idris at the ever-engaging helm, Outside the Wire gives us an intellectually subtle debate on AI technology as a war machine alongside human soldiers.
No. Bullshit. There is nothing subtle about this movie. Anthony Mackie at one point turns to this guy and goes, well, maybe humans just aren't emotional enough. I'm sorry, that's not subtle writing. That's not me saying about anything about the overall quality of the writing. Of all the things that is, it is not at all subtle.
Speaking of not subtle, Daniel Sulzman of Sulzy at the Movies.
Yeah, self-employed loser.
There it is. Outside.
I do it at this point just because it makes you happy.
Yep. Outside the Wire borrows from many favorite 1980s action films, but it also isn't a stretch to say that Anthony Mackie is the Black Terminator. Wow, do you not understand that character at all?
Either the character that Mackie's playing in this movie, or the Terminator. This is a failure of comprehension on multiple levels. It's actually impressive if it weren't so grating.
Yeah, the line like that, you fundamentally misunderstood the Terminator movies and did not know what you were watching outside of boom explosions.
You also, again, have fundamentally not understood what this character is trying to do or get across. Like, again, every possible level you could have missed the mark, you missed the mark. other than Anthony Mackie being black, and how dare you assume what he identifies as.
Peter DeBruge of Variety, top critic. Hey, we just read from Variety.
Variety is a useless rag of a publication suitable not even for toilet paper in third world countries.
An alarmist Rise of the Machines premise points to a Terminator-like future with very different results in this serviceable sci-fi war movie.
I beg of all of these idiot reviewers, find a single other franchise dealing with robots going crazy in a war setting to talk about and reference other than Terminator. They exist, but you're all too...
Why can't they reference Lawnmower Man?
Well, because the less said about Lawnmower Man, the better.
Nobody references Lawnmower Man anymore. That depresses me.
No one should. It's terrible.
All right. That wraps it up for Outside the Wire. It was fun to do this again.
Seriously. There are other movies about AI gone wild. There are other war movies about AI gone wild. You don't have to reference the Terminator every time you want to try and make a comparison, but again, you're all too lazy or stupid or both to actually put forth the effort to do so.
So this Friday, February 5th, a Korean sci-fi adventure movie will be debuting on Netflix called Space Sweepers. And we will do a Damn You Hollywood at a little later recording time than normal, 9:30. We will be doing a Damn You Hollywood for that. We will also be reviewing Disenchantment, Part 3. And then on February 16th, we will be doing another Damn You Hollywood for a straight-to-VOD movie, Willy's Wonderland, which is basically Five Nights at Freddy's.
Pretty much. I really hope Nicolas Cage doesn't have a single line of dialogue in that entire movie.
We will be doing a Damn You Hollywood for the Peter Dinklage movie, I Care a Lot.
Mark, he cares a lot.
He does. We care a lot about the sickness and disease. We care a lot about the falling in the seas.
The words to the song.
just mumbling through it.
That's just sad.
So, yeah, we will do I Care a Lot on February 25th. And then our big feature review coming up. Finally, we'll get to do another one of these. Tom and Jerry will be debuting in both theaters and on HBO Max on Friday the 26th. And we will do a Damn You Hollywood for that on March 2nd. Are you excited about Tom and Jerry? I know what that silent means. That silent means shut up, Bradledge. I've had enough of you and your nonsense.
It's the closest thing I could say. That's the most poetic way I could have made my point about how I...
all right. Today we did a review of the Royal Rumble. Yesterday we did All Hail Megatron.
I'm listening to your Rumble review at the moment.
Yeah.
I assume you're going to make fun of Paul Heyman for not knowing how handcuffs work.
My exact line is, you know you're fat when you're sitting crisscross applesauce and get blown up on trying to unlock handcuffs.
You know what? I will give Paul Heyman... I give him crap for not understanding the mechanics, not for getting tired. He got tired. It took him longer to blow up than it did Goldberg. Goldberg had a heart attack on his way to the ring. Those weren't security walking him down. They were paramedics.
Just waiting with the cardiac machine.
There was an AED right there ready to go. Goldberg has not been a meaningful, useful contributor to the genre of professional wrestling for 20 years at this point. Stop wasting time and money on him.
We'll be reviewing the new Weezer album on Thursday the 4th.
Why is there a Weezer album?
And then we'll be reviewing AEW Dynamite Beach Break on Friday the 5th. Also, if you go back in the archives, we did Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, issue 6 through 8. Part 4 of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, Labyrinth, Welcome to the Absurd Circus, Looney Tunes Season 1C, WWE Superstar Spectacle. Myself and Robert did some boxing commentaries. We did one for Trevor Bryan versus Berman Stervin.
Apparently, did you see the numbers on that? Apparently, Don King made another couple of burner accounts to listen to it and download it. So we got up to like 11.
And then, shut up.
I'm convinced that's the only person listening to.
And then we did another boxing commentary for Caleb Plant versus Caleb Truex. All right, that's all I got. What do you got?
You and I were much more complimentary, I think, of that Plant Truex fight than a lot of other people.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of people really kind of bury that,
and they buried Caleb in particular. They were like, "Why didn't Caleb finish him?"
Well, it's not only that. The intelligent people. Well, Caleb didn't. Plant didn't get a finish because apparently he busted his left. I can't say he broke, but he injured his left hand at some point in the middle of the fight.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger question is, but for why are we making fights where someone is a minus 2,200 favorite?
Well,
and I think that's really the question we have to ask ourselves as it pertains to of this stuff.
Here's my question in all of this. Was Caleb Truex mandatory for the IBF? Because if he was mandatory, it's kind of not his fault. That's their ranking, and that's who they have. I mean, either have mandatory contenders or don't.
He was mandatory, but again, the point there kind of becomes, at what point does the whole mandatory system become just a detriment to the overall architecture of boxing?
Yeah. I mean, I guess you're right about that.
That's a much bigger question that requires a lot more nuance to discuss and does not have a very clear answer. I mean, I don't have an easy answer to that question.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, talked about that. There was a very short episode of the 411 Ground and Pound MMA podcast this last Sunday. It's a preview of the Overeem versus Volkov card. Not a lot of news came out over the last week. That's why it's short, so there's all of that. You can find me Fridays covering WWE SmackDown over in the Wrestling Zone of 411mania.com. You can find me Saturdays covering MMA in the MMA Zone of 411mania. And again, we'll be happy. We're happy to have Damn You Hollywood having a bit of a schedule again, finally. We are muddling our way through as best we can. But we're getting there. So you can find me on all of those places. I don't think I have anything else under the plug. Mark went over the schedule we have coming up here. And yeah, I think that's kind of it for me as far as things I have planned at the moment. But we'll be back, a couple of weeks to the Sweepers event.
Yep.
So hope to see you all then. If you've enjoyed what you've listened to thus far. Again, see you again in the future, assuming there is a future. Until next, thank you all very much again. Please stay safe out there and continue, as always, to be well, be safe, and behave.